Hello. Welcome to the Unity Spiritual Center of Albuquerque podcast featuring the Reverend Gordon Kyler or occasionally a guest speaker. You can find us online at uscabq.org or by searching for Unity Spiritual Center Albuquerque on Facebook or YouTube. You can visit us in person at 9800 Candelaria Road Northeast in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Today's special guest is Michael Small.
And I just wanted to say, Gordon did say hi, and so Novella and Gordon is having a wonderful time. So they're sending you their love. So today we're on week 10, which is zeal, and we're going to be looking at zeal through the lens of Sister Act. Zeal is our ability to be enthusiastic and passionate, as well as to inspire and motivate oneself and others. Enthusiasm originated from the Greek word in and theos, meaning in God or God within. It embodies eager interest, zeal, divine inspiration, and passionate and fervor. Henry Chester said it this way: enthusiasm is the greatest asset in the world. It overwhelms and engulfs all obstacles. It is nothing more nor less than faith in action. Sounds like Unity's fifth principle, doesn't it? It's not enough to know that and understand the principles. We must put them into action. Here at Unity, we believe that each of us possess the 12 inherent abilities known as the 12 powers, each aligning with different disciples of Jesus. One of these powers is zeal, the power to ignite action and get things started. Zeal is like the initial thrust of a rocket, the powerful force that lifts it off the ground, fueled by energy and enthusiasm. It takes a lot to get the rocket moving, and that's what zeal does. It propels us forward. Now, the power to sustain the momentum, to keep things going, might be referred to as strength or perseverance. But zeal is what gives us the first big push, that deep dive into action. It's what drives us to do what is ours to do. Today we celebrate the power of zeal, which aligns with the disciple Simon the Zealot, recognizing the noble and passionate energies he embodies. We all have zeal within us. Each one of us has the powers, all these powers that we've been talking about for the last several weeks. They are faith, strength, love, wisdom, imagination, understanding, will, order, zeal, illumination, and life, just in case you forgot. Has there been times in your life where you felt stuck, that you were glued to your chair or couch? Huh? Lacking the energy to get up and move? That's when we need to tap into our zeal, the power within us that can lift us up and set us in motion. That reminds me of one of Charles Fillmore's most famous quotes. I fairly sizzle with zeal and enthusiasm. I spring forth with a mighty faith to do the things that need to be done. For me, he was 94 years old when he said that. I hope I'm just as lucky. Remember, our powers are not something that we need to create. We already have them. They simply need to be developed. You and I naturally have enthusiasm. We're really enthusiastic. We experience enthusiasm in spiritual ways as a deep sense when we are in this flow. In fact, zeal is often compared with order, which we talked about last week, and wisdom. This pairing also is important because with all the powers, If they're left alone by themselves, we become unbalanced. The word zealot comes from the root word zeal. When our fervor, our passion for something becomes unbalanced, so do we. We need to combine that zeal, our enthusiasm, with wisdom and strength, and be open to the flow of divine order. True enthusiasm for what we do and who we are supports us reaching our goal and living into our dreams. Enthusiasm helps us to enjoy everyday life. It helps me to stay in the game, to get off the sidelines, to be participating instead of a spectator. Enthusiasm helps us to follow through on relationships and projects that are worthwhile. Have you ever started working on a goal or a project and all of a sudden it got hard? And you think, God must not want me to do this? This is taking a lot more time, energy, money, and effort, fill in the blank, than I thought it would. It's our power of enthusiasm that keeps us moving forward to overcome the inevitable obstacles to quiet the chatter that comes that can hold us back. Enthusiasm doesn't need to create false excitement or drama. Enthusiasm finds humor and excitement every day and in ordinary things. True enthusiasm says, I love who I am, I love what I do, and I love my life. This brings us to our movie, Brazil, Sister Act, Dolores Van Cartier, who is a Reno lounge singer who accidentally witnesses her married casino mob boss boyfriend killing an employee. When she runs to the police, she's put into a witness protection program in a convent. We know from earlier flashbacks that Dolores didn't really fit into the Catholic school environment, having an obvious rebellious streak. I think many of us can relate to that. She struggled with Reverend Mother from the first interaction, although we see a foreshadowing of the mutual respect that will eventually evolve into a relationship. Now, Sister Mary Clarence Dolores has a hard time adjusting to the sparse lifestyle of the sisters, noticing that all they do is work and pray. When asked to bless her first meal as a nun, she prays, "Bless us, O Lord, for these gifts which are about to receive. And yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of no food, I will fear no hunger. We want you to give us this day our daily bread, and to the republic for which it stands. And by the power invested in me, I pronounce us ready to eat. Amen." When shown to her room or her cell, Mary Clarence balks at the lack of comfort and demands to know what she's supposed to do from 9 p.m. till morning. The Reverend Mother, played brilliantly by Maggie Smith, who I just adore, responds this way: "If I were you, I use this time to think about my life and the direction or lack thereof." And Mary Clarence insists, "Before I came here, my life was fine." To which the Reverend Mother replies, "Your singing career was almost non-existent, and your married lover wants you dead. If you're fooling anyone, it's yourself. God brought you here. Take the hint." We see that Dolores initially has a very difficult time adjusting to being Sister Mary Clarence. Discipline, service, and putting others' needs before her own is definitely not what she's used to. But when several of the sisters reach out to her, she begins to see things differently. She also begins to see the Reverend Mother differently, recognizing she has lived a life of service and genuinely cares for the sisters. When the Reverend Mother assigned her to the choir, she says, you sleep and you will sing. That will be your task until you leave. Initially not happy with the assignment, the choir is, by their own omission, pretty terrible. When asked to take the leadership of the choir, Mary Clarence embraces her assignment. And we begin to see the transformation not only of Dolores, but of the choir. And through the choir, the community. You have to put attitude into your singing. This is rejoicing. You are singing to the Lord, and you will have to learn to listen to each other. That's the big key. You have to listen to each other if you're going to be in a group. We also see at this point that Dolores is a keen observer of human nature. She enrolls Sister Mary Lazarus, former director of the choir, into helping her and insists that her support that the choir practice every single day. The sisters enthusiastically agree. They love to sing and they want to be the best that they can be. Their first Sunday under Sister Mary Clarence's direction, they inspire not only the Monsignor, but are so good that people from the neighborhood start coming in from the outside. The choir sings with enthusiasm, obviously loving what they're doing and loving being good at what they're doing. A very new feeling for them. The Reverend Mother, however, is not thrilled with this new style of music Sister Mary Clarence has brought, until Monsignor says, Monsignor praising the choir and the Reverend Mother's vision. Mary Clarence jumps on that chance to encourage the sisters and the Reverend Mother to leave the comfort of their walls and go out into the community. There's a lot we can do for them, she says, besides praying for them. Again, our fifth principle, praying is important, but we cannot just stop at prayer. We must put feet, action, behind our prayers. And that's exactly what they did. They tore down the barbed wire fence. They took down the gates in front of the church. They opened their hearts and their home to their community. They cleaned up the church and their street and started a daycare for local families. The sisters are rediscovering their zeal. Helping others is why we become nuns, they said. Another sister had earlier shared with her sister Mary Clarence that she knew from a very young age that she had been called to service. And Dolores is rediscovering what she loves, which is singing. The earlier cynicism we saw at the casino has disappeared, and she loved leading the choir, and she loves supporting the sisters. The Reverend Mother, however, is still not pleased. Now, it would be easy to vilify her, to be critical of her view, but if we were honest, how many of us would identify with her? The world is changing around her, and she's scared, not only for herself, but for the people she loves. When the sisters vote to perform Dolores's inappropriate music for the Pope, it's just too much for the Reverend Mother, and she privately submits her resignation to the Monsignor, telling Dolores that she's just a relic. But everything changes when Dolores' hiding place is discovered. All the media attention around the Pope visit had revealed her location. She's kidnapped by the casino's henchmen and brought back to Reno. The Reverend Mother and the sisters hire a helicopter. In a very funny scene where we see them pulling out all the stops to guilt him into helping them fly them to Reno, and race to the Moonlight Lounge to rescue Dolores. Of course, Lieutenant Saunders saves the day at the critical moment, and Dolores and the sisters are rescued. After embracing Sister Mary Clarence, the Reverend Mother became stern again. I hold you responsible for all of this, for introducing a lounge act into our convent and utterly disrupting our lives and exposing us to mortal journey. Thank you. After the transformation is complete, throughout the movie, we see Dolores and the sisters remembering who they are. And remember that what brings them joy, remembering as Sister Mary Roberts expressed to Dolores, what things is that only I can do? In the case of Sister Mary Roberts, she literally found her voice and ended up singing for the Pope. Sister Mary Lazarus remembered that serving can be fun, and the Reverend Mother discovered the world beyond the walls of the convent. Go ahead and show the clip. You know how sometimes you just have to be yourself or you're just going to burst? This is zeal, just yearning to be unleashed. What is trying to burst out of you right now? What do you love to do? And are you willing to look at what you might not be doing? Let me say that again. And are you willing to look at why you're not doing what you're doing? Does that make sense? What walls have we built around ourselves and our dreams? Like the Reverend Mother, we might think we're keeping ourselves and those we love safe, but at what cost? And if there really is only one power and one presence, what do we need to be kept safe from? Disappointment? Failure? A little discomfort? If you believe you could not fail, what would you even, are you willing to try? What I love about the movie is that both Dolores and the Reverend Mother became willing to grow beyond their comfort zone, because they saw that the people they cared about, the people that really needed them, excuse me. Dolores was actually disappointed when Lieutenant Saunders called and told her that she could leave the convent anytime. She had genuinely come to love the sisters and saw that she was making a difference, but not only in their lives, but in the lives of the community. As comfortable as the Reverend Mother had become behind the convent walls, when Dolores needed rescuing, she rose to the occasion, flew to Reno, and stood up to three men holding guns. At one point in the film, Sister Mary Roberts asked Dolores, as Sister Mary Clarence, "When did you receive the call?" Everyone in this room has received the call to do something. What is your call? What is your passion? What do you love to do? When I was a teenager, while other boys were chasing after soccer balls and footballs, idolizing superheroes and sports figures, my idols were different. I liked Martin Luther King and Gandhi. I had a strong feeling and ideas about making my community better, even at a young age. I began to preach at a young age, delivering sermons to the neighborhood children, using my dresser as a lectern. My sister thought I was a bit odd. But you know what? I had this deep sense. I had a deep need to learn more about who God was and why Jesus played such a critical role in my life. I know that many of us come from backgrounds where we've been hurt spiritually, making it difficult to trust in a higher power, whether that's Jesus, God, or any other spiritual connection. For some, traditional churches don't even feel right anymore. You might have thought, why do I need to do this? I don't want to go anywhere, pay money, and feel guilty or terrible about myself when I can do that on my own. But you know what? What is important is to realize, when we realize that unity is different. Unity is a spiritual movement. It always has been. And it, much like Martin Luther King and Gandhi. In chapter 2 of Luke, there's a story about the birth of Jesus and later when he was 12 years old. Do you remember when you were 12? I do. I thought I had the world all figured out. I guess I didn't. Anyway, in chapter 2, Mary, Joseph, and Jesus goes to Jerusalem for Passover, a major celebration for the Israelites. exiting from slavery to the promised land. Every year, Jesus' family would travel to Jerusalem for this important event, but as children sometimes do, Jesus wandered off. After a day, Mary and Joseph realized Jesus wasn't there with them, and they anxiously searched for him for 3 days. Finally, they found him in the great Jewish temple, engaging with teachers and asking profound questions about Jewish law and scripture. The teachers were amazed by the depth of understanding. When Mary and Joseph found him, they asked, "Where have you been? Why did you leave us?" And Jesus replied, "Didn't you know I would be in my Father's house doing my Father's will?" I believe that this speaks to why we are all here, to be about our Creator's business, to align with our spiritual source. You don't have to believe everything I say, but I truly think if we are here for a higher purpose, not just drifting through life, chasing temporary pleasures that only bring fleeting happiness, we're all here for something greater. This might not be what you typically hear at Unity services, but it's rooted in our tradition. Myrtle and Charles Fillmore, the co-founders of Unity Movement, had a very personal and intimate connection with Jesus. Myrtle, after receiving a terminal diagnosis, would spend hours in prayer every day, sitting by an empty chair for Jesus. She found deep personal healings in that connection. Charles Fillmore would also enter a mystic trance, and his family would say he was filled with the Holy Spirit. Unity has sometimes drifted from the personal aspect of God, but recently through sessions like the whole body mystical awareness or awakening, many of us has reconnected with that divine experience. It's about embracing the true essence of Jesus, not only as a figure, not to judge, but as a friend of those who were outcasts, like tax collectors and so-called sinners. Jesus didn't reject anyone, and that's the core part of Unity's teaching. Charles Fillmore and others deeply studied various spiritual traditions, including Kabbalah, Hinduism, Hermetics. Each of us is on a spiritual journey, evolving to be the Christ within. As Jesus said in the Gospels of John, "Greater things you shall do. He didn't make it all about himself. He empowered us, saying, "You are the light of the world." We are here to grow, to expand, and evolve. And while you have the freedom to choose how you live, I was convinced early in life that I am here for God alone. For years, I dedicated myself to feeding the hungry, caring for the sick, and supporting men on their journey. My call has always been to be helping and transform the world. I invite you to consider your own purpose. If you have the vision for a better world, it starts with recognizing the power and the light within you. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed today's message. If you would like to support this podcast, you may do so at uscabq.org.